As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I don't know what most white people in this country feel. I can only include what they feel from the state of their institutions. Now, this is the evidence. You want me to make an act of faith, risking myself, my wife, my woman, my sister, my children, on some idealism which you assure me exists in America, which I have never seen.
So today we have a very special guest, Derek Barnes, who is the National Book Award finalist for his 2022 graphic novel, Victory Stand, Raising My Fist for Justice, which also won the 2023 YALSA Excellence in Young Adult Nonfiction Award and a Coretta Scott King Award Author Honor. So this book is just beautiful. I highly recommend that our audience buy it and check it out. Like, we are excited to hear more about it and about the story behind the book, but also you cannot just through audio get everything that we want you to get out of this. So we want you to go buy the book, see it, read it, and have the way that the story and the illustrations work together to powerfully convey these stories is just awesome. So Derek, we are very excited to have you and hear more about you. First, want to start out the way we typically do by setting aside for a minute the things you've done and just hearing who you are. So could you introduce yourself? Who is Derek Barnes?
Sure. Man, first of all, thank you, brothers, for having me on. I appreciate you. So Derek Barnes is, I'm a Midwest boy, born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri. My family was originally from Clarksdale, Mississippi, so I have Mississippi roots. Been started writing early on when I was 10, man. Just been very curious about history. I was like curious about just nonfiction subject matter. I've always been a information junkie, information nerd. Started writing when I was 10. Fell in love with hip hop music, which is my first introduction to poetry and short fiction. Stevie Wonder, remember, you know, I used to copy down Stevie Wonder lyrics and just be fascinated in his use of adjectives and the way he expressed emotion. Langston Hughes, probably my first literary figure that I fell in love with. From him, I just kind of pulled dialogue and character development. You know, jazz music is a very heavy influence from people that are from that area, or from Kansas City. So I've always been fascinated by jazz musicians. You know, Charlie Parker's a Kansas City native, so I think I infused all of those things early on to kind of influence my writing style. I write in a very personable but rhythmic kind of style. Graduated from high school and went back to Mississippi, where my roots are from, and attended Jackson State University. Met my wife there, fell in love with a girl from Compton, California in Jackson, Mississippi. We've been married for 22 years coming up in May. We have four beautiful sons. Ezra, who was a senior at North Carolina A&T. Solo, who was a freshman at Fayetteville State here in North Carolina. Silas, who's a junior in high school. He's 16. And our baby boy, Nambi, who is 11. He actually has a basketball game today at 2:30. So I can't wait to go check him out. But yeah, man, my whole life is just about my family, man. I sit around my family. I have like maybe 14, 15 books in print, all children's books. I've won a few awards. My career started in 2004, but didn't really take off till 2017. So I've been grinding for a long time. Book entitled Crown, An Ode to the Fresh Cut was the book that kicked the door down for me. It won a Newbery Honor, Coretta Scott King Honor, won the Ezra Jack Keats Award, won the Kirkus Prize, which is one of the largest American monetary prizes. And I've actually won that twice. So, man, for like a 13, 15 year stretch, I didn't have anything. And the thing that turned my career around really was me just really realizing, who am I actually writing for? And I tell writers that all the time, like, figure out who you are writing for. Right before Crown took off, 2016, I was in this office and I'm sitting in right now. No books, no desks. It was completely bare. I was, considering quitting, like stop writing. One of my sons came in. I was sitting on the floor working on a book, like my 30th book that nobody wanted. And he was eating an apple. I think he was 10. That was my son, Solo. He's like, Daddy, you know what you should do? You should write the blackest book ever. And it just sparked something in me, man. Like, I was trying to write books for these gatekeepers in the publishing industry, but I had forgotten who my target audience was. And it's mostly black boys and it's black children. Like, you have to forget about, as a black artist, you are by default a activist. So we had to get over that hump. And you have to continue to keep in focus who your target audience is. And because there's still a dearth of books that show the humanity and brilliance of black children, I just feel like I'm obligated to do that. And so once I made that switch, man, everything opened up for me. Everything opened up for me. I'm just so grateful to be able to do what I do for a living, man. And again, just glad you guys have me on today.
Yeah. You highlight something that I just want to dig into just for a second there with the gatekeeper's comment. And we've kind of talked about this a little bit before, but just the fact that it's like, old white men control the institutions that control many of these industries. Like, there are, what, 5 major publishers for books. There are just a few major publishers for music. And so as a black author, there's this like reality of having to kind of write for almost 2 audiences at once if you want to get by the gatekeepers to get to your audience. And I mean, it just shouldn't be that way, because whenever black people in our culture are given the opportunity to actually just have a voice that is unfiltered by like those white constraints, such good things come out of it. And I just hope that the industry can start to see that pattern, that like all these brilliant works that come from just giving black people a microphone and saying like, okay, what do you want to say? And I'm glad to hear that you found a way through that filter and have found a way to say what you wanted to say, and that you have had the opportunity to have this grassroots success that just has boiled up around it. I think that's awesome. So tell us a little bit about this story then with Tommy Smith. What kind of inspired this project, and tell us about how it kind of got kicked off.
Sure. Just going back to that book, Crown, An Ode to the Fresh Cut, the book that really sparked my career. Crown was my 9th book. So the prior 8 books were published by one of those major 5 houses. Crown was published by a small imprint outside of Chicago. It's called Agate. And they have been most popular for publishing like cookbooks and biographies, award-winning books nonetheless. But I think that's how I found my pathway to get in. And I think a lot of black authors, I think it'd be helpful to target a lot of these small publishing houses, because they are not as confined as the 5 big houses are. They will take risks and take chances. And the fact that the book won so many awards really allowed some editors at the larger houses to open their arms to me, that this could happen with a smaller house. It could happen with one of these larger houses. So in 2018, when all the award ceremonies were happening, my agent took me around to, it's the American Library Association conference. It was in the spring. She took me around to all the different houses, and we were like maybe 50 yards away from the W.W. Norton and the Norton Young Readers table. And my agent asked, hey, I've been offered to, I'm the author to co-write a children's book with the 1968 Olympic Tommy Smith. You think you'd be interested in that? And before I knew it, we were at the Norton table, and I just said yes. And that's exactly how it happened, man. It was just a spur in the moment thing. She knew I would be the right author for this project. And so I guess late 2018, I had a chance to go to Stone Mountain, Georgia, where Dr. Smith now resides. Beautiful home. He and his wife, they were so gracious and so kind to me. And I went down there like 3 times, but that first time was very memorable, man, because she made dinner for me. I brought flowers. And he took me down to his man cave where all of his trophies are and all of his fan art. And I was really geeked out just to meet this guy because, you know, before then, when you see that 1968 image, it looks like two Black Panthers qualified for the Olympic Games. And so, you know, you always have that image like this is a powerful protest image, but you never knew the story behind it. So when I got a chance to sit down with him and take notes, man, after like 20 minutes, I put my pad and pencil down, I put my phone down, which I had on record. And I just realized, man, this is just a country boy from Texas, man. And he could have easily been my uncle. He could easily be my father. And he was so excited to actually talk about that day. And I felt like going into it that he would probably be tired of talking about it. But he was so excited to talk about that day. He's a very thoughtful man. He's a gentleman. He's very much into the physiological aspect of athletes and how the human body works. And I've learned so much just from touring with him. Again, just realizing that all of us have a God-given ability. And it's up to us to realize how we're going to use our ability to connect with other people, to change the world. He was blessed with the gift of speed. And he had to win that race that day in order to be on that number one podium, in order to raise his fist that day. So I realized a lot from working with him about where we are, where we're supposed to be, and how we're supposed to utilize what we've been given in order to change the world. And I learned so much about writing this book. It's just been a privilege, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a thread that ties together a couple of things you just said is just that combination of like the hard work that goes in on the front end. Like you had to write all these books and do all this hard work on the front end in order to get that opportunity. The introduction to Tommy Smith kind of was in some ways luck, but it was luck that was built upon all this foundation that you had laid of hard work that you had put in. And same for Tommy Smith, like all the hard work he had to do on the front end to open up the doors for him to have the opportunity to become like this iconic figure that helped to change the world. And it was built on this foundation of how many thousands of hours of running. And I think that's just a powerful reminder to people who are chugging away at their careers or trying to make it, to lay that foundation of the hard work, that there is like an aspect of luck, but it's built on this foundation that you had all this diligence to lay. I think that's really cool testimony to the work that you guys put in. So then you had this time with Tommy Smith. What is something that kind of was different about him and his story than what you, because I'm sure you kind of looked up his story somewhat beforehand. So going into that and meeting him and hearing it from him, what are some things that were different or that stood out to you? And how did you go about trying to capture some of that in your book?
I took a ton of notes, man. And he even had some handwritten notes that he sent me. So I've put those away in a secret location and locked them up. But I also devoured his autobiography. It's entitled Silent Gesture, and I've marked that book up. I bought it digitally, and I just kind of consumed his whole life, really. We would go out and do speaking engagements. When people would ask him questions, I would jump in and answer. Like, I was an expert, you know, on his life. The thing that really ties his story into protests and resistance to the current day athlete, I think he was the first one really to sacrifice not only his career, but his whole life in order to use his platform to raise people awareness about racism, racial injustice. I tried to tie in a lot of different events along his own personal timeline, like where he was when he was in high school and college and all these different events. And at the same time, four little girls in Birmingham were killed in a bombing. At the same time, John Lewis, who was not a congressman at the time, walked across the Edmonds Pettus Bridge. At the same time, he was in high school during this time. Mecca Evers was assassinated outside of his home. So all of these things were kind of building up in him because he's from a large sharecropping family. There was 12 kids in his family. And his parents never really talked about race. They never talked about politics, but he was a very curious child, very curious young man. And he did a lot of self-study. And so they just kind of met at a certain apex when he arrived at San Jose State. And he realized at that moment, the more he learned about his history and the more he realized how his celebrity as an American athlete can both be kind of used in order to bring awareness to these things. During that period of time in the 1960s, he had a ton of black athletes who were using their platforms, you know, Bill Russell, Lew Alcindor, Muhammad Ali, obviously, and they knew the power of their platforms, that black athletes were not just supposed to be used as entertainment. Like we all come from these same environments where these lynchings and these bombings are happening. And if we don't utilize our platforms in order to say something, then what good are we? And I think he realized that at the age of 24. That day in Mexico City. It had obviously led up to that moment, but his life is a perfect example and a perfect tale of, again, how we come to realize what our God-given abilities are supposed to be used for. And I love hearing him speak because he reminds you of that old Southern wise. He really could be a pastor, to be honest with you, but It really touches me when he talks about his sacrifice and the things that he had to go through after the Olympics when he was kind of blackballed, exiled, he couldn't get a job and those things. And that was actually his last race that he ever ran at the age of 24. You know, that was one of the things that really blew my mind. I didn't realize that before I started working on this project.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It was like that basically, he sacrificed his career in order to have that one moment of protest.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to me some of the things that were like world bending back then. Like even we recently did an episode on Medgar Evers and him applying to the University of Mississippi was like news, front page news all across the state, just applying to this school. Mm-hmm. Or here, I mean, the fact that for Tommy Smith, it was world-changing to raise your fist. Is like, it feels kind of crazy to realize that that would end your career, that the world of that day was so opposed to, and part of what was going on there, I think, was also just international relations. It was a global stage. America in the Cold War was being shamed for its racism. And so then this protest was on this world stage to show like, we are being persecuted. We're not content. And Tommy Smith took off his shoes at the time as like a symbolic gesture to highlight African-American poverty. And it was like this iconic and powerful picture. But then it just the fact that that would end someone's career, the fact that it would be as big of a backlash and this white backlash indignation in response to that, is a little bit kind of crazy to wrap my mind around today, but could you like maybe talk a little bit about the world of that day and why that was such a big deal?
Yeah. I was just thinking about how far have we actually come when Colin Kaepernick is still unemployed?
Silent.
We're silent gestures, and I really believe it. When we first started hearing about Colin Kaepernick and why he couldn't get a job, we were blaming the owners of these NFL teams. And After I kind of dug into that situation a little bit more, I just kind of realized that those 32 owners are not equipped to face the real issue. And the real issue is American citizens, really. Like, The owners are trying to win championships, but more so they're trying to make money. And if they're predominantly white male demographic ticket buyer could care less about Colin Kaepernick protesting police brutality, then they would have signed them. But we're talking about like a deeper national issue. The fact that there have been NFL athletes who have killed people in DUI accidents, who have beat their wives, who have abused their children, and they still play football, and none of the fans care. But this man knelt during the national anthem, and he hasn't played football in almost a decade. So how far have we really come, you know?
Yeah.
Same thing with Dr. Smith, yeah.
Oh, I think that's a really good point. I think back about just some of the blatantly racist things that Southern politicians would say back in the 60s. And it's on one level easy to say like, that was a terrible person. But then to realize like, we're all implicated by that because he's saying that knowing that that's who his voters are going to vote for. Like politicians highlight like what the voter base is wanting. And so like when the politicians would say those racist things, it's like that implicates the entire society that's voting for them.
Yeah.
And the same way what you're describing, it's so true that like NFL owners are responding to their demographic and their monetary incentives. And so it implicates all of us. It's not just one owner who's a bad actor. It shines a spotlight on where we're at in this fight to respect dignity of Black lives. Yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah. I want to talk about the format of this book. Initially, I was thinking of doing a traditional middle grade novel. And then I thought about writing a book in verse. But the idea came to me just from researching some graphic novels. I was reading a graphic novel on Frederick Douglass. A graphic novel on Satchel Paige. And then there was a graphic novel called Chinese Born American, which has won a ton of awards. And so I was just trying to figure out format. And the graphic novel format just fit perfectly because the fact that Dr. Smith was once the fastest man on the planet. He was the first person to run a 200-meter race in less than 20 seconds. So I think the format just fit perfectly.
And his record stood until like 2010.
Yeah, long time, man.
Yeah, long time for that record to stand.
The crazy thing about him breaking the record is he was actually injured in the semifinals. He hurt his groin. So I didn't know that before I did research. He actually shouldn't have even ran that race. But when he was describing to me, and I go back to my notes, he was describing to me how he was able to recover in less than 2 hours. He was talking about his body like it was a Ferrari. The percentage of acceleration he had to give in certain parts of that 200-meter race when he needed to pull back. And so I used that conversation as opportunity to, I said, I need a through line for this book. So instead of telling like a straight cradle to current story, I used that 20-second race. And I kind of cut it up in blotches and I kind of sparsed it in between tales of when he was growing up in Texas, the sharecropping, all the way to high school and college until I met up with that day in 1968. And so our conversations really helped me to form the format that I want to use. I think we did a good job. You know, Dawood did an excellent job of taking the manuscript and just making magic. You know, this is my first graphic novel, so. Like I said, I'm just extremely proud of the work that we did.
Mm-hmm. I think you guys objectively did a very good job.
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, it's work to be proud of. And again, I just really recommend the audience check it out. I mean, you can look and you can preview it on Amazon if you want to read the first few pages on there. And I can't imagine people doing that and not wanting to buy the book from there.
Yeah, and you know, I guess one more thing about how this book could be used in order to further social justice in this country. I think the book is perfect. It's a young adult book, but I think it could be used in elementary schools, you know, middle schools. Going back to the point that I made, you know, initially about how all of us have God-given abilities. That may be the ability to communicate, It doesn't have to always be a performative skill like track and field or being a good vocalist or being able to write, but whatever you've been blessed with, I think, first of all, we need to educate ourselves, you know, and the country is starting to ban a lot of books in different states and whatnot. I think children need to, and also the parents that'll take care of these children. You have to do an excellent job of going outside of the education system, unfortunately, and providing your children with books about the true history of this country. That's the first thing we have to do. And then second, with all that information that you have about the true history of racism in this country, take your God-given abilities, and I don't care if it's at your school or in your neighborhood or citywide, nationally, and actually do something. Actually do something. Put all that information, mesh with your God-given abilities to work. And that's exactly what Tommy Smith did. So I'm just asking all young people, not just to read this book, but to use your God-given abilities, educate yourself, and to make a difference. If it's just to make a difference where you live, in order to make things more equitable for everybody.
Yeah. There's that like Gandhi quote, be the change you want to see in the world. Like we don't have the power to completely change the world on a dime, but we have the power to live as citizens of a better world, to live as a part of the way that the world should be. And so in whatever spheres of influence we have to like learn and educate yourself on the shame and brokenness of the past, but in order to start to change and to live in a better today, a better tomorrow. I think that's powerful. So we're coming close on the end of our time, and we always want to close by kind of just hearing you, and you kind of just did this, but we just want to draw it out even more, hearing you speak directly to our audience. So not kind of like picture yourself talking to us here, but to the listener who is driving here or there and or going about their day. Like, what is something that you could send them off with? Maybe an encouragement or exhortation, or just, I mean, even thinking about what it meant for Tommy Smith to sacrifice what he sacrificed and that willingness to sacrifice to make a change are all kind of themes that I've drawn from what you've said so far. But maybe what are some other parting thoughts you would give us?
I was going to read a section, if that would be okay.
I would love that.
All right. I think this wraps it up pretty good. This is right before and during he received his gold medal. Also, another gem that I found out while writing this book is that, you know, when he had his fist in the air and his head was bowed and the national anthem was playing, he was actually saying the Lord's Prayer. Come from a very religious family, so I try to intersperse that in there as well when the national anthem was playing. But read this section right here. This is during the medal ceremony. So I think, you know, the way he ends it really caps up the theme of this book, really. John and I stood there patiently clutching our sneakers in our hands, behind our backs with our spirits humbled and our heads bowed. Every chance I got, I say a small prayer. There was no time better than that moment. If your soul wasn't right, you probably couldn't see it, couldn't feel it. All of a sudden, I was aware of everything, but afraid of nothing. They called our names one at a time. I leaped on top of the highest platform on that victory stand with the number one placard in front of it. I lifted both of my hands toward the heavens. An official in a cherry red blazer slid on the gold medal with the green ribbon around my neck. From the cotton fields of Texas and California to an Olympic field in Mexico. And a gold medal with a green ribbon around my neck. I had come a mighty long way. It was time. First, there was silence, and then the United States national anthem began to blare across the stadium, over our heads, over the stands. John and I shared a pair of black leather gloves. He wore the left one, and I had on the right. I clenched that fist with the black glove so tight, I could feel my knuckles pop and the tips of my nails pierce my palm. I held it up like a torch, defiant. There was no way I would place my hand over my heart and honor a flag for a country that did not honor me or people who looked like me. I could hear the wind whip around my forearm. My eyes were closed as the anthem went on in the background of my mind. I bowed my hand again and I talked to God. 80 seconds. That's how long we stood there as the anthem played. Those fists in the air were dedicated to everyone at home back in the projects in Chicago, Oakland, and Detroit, to everyone in the boroughs of Queens and Brooklyn, to all of the brothers and sisters, fathers and mothers in Birmingham, Atlanta, Dallas, Houston, St. Louis, New Orleans, to everyone struggling, working their fingers to the bone on farms across America, to everyone holding out hope that things will get better. That was for you, from John and me. We had to be seen because we were not being heard. That was the end of the third chapter. Victory stand, raising my fist for justice.
Wow. How can we direct our audience to follow you and support you? I mean, obviously, we'll put the link to the book in the show notes, but do you have social media or other places that we can continue to follow you?
Yeah, I'm most active on Instagram. You can find me at Author Derek D. Barnes, all lowercase. And my website is Derek D. Barnes. D is my middle initial, DerekDBarnes.com. Yeah, those are two places to find me.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time and yeah, appreciate you bringing to light a story that continues to have such value, like you said, such relevance to today.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yep. God bless.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.